episode 75 of Drunk on Comics. Fucking 75 years old, guys.
Where is old as Superman?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Man, did you see that 75th anniversary montage epicness animation?
No.
Yeah, man, you should have listened to our podcast where we talked about that.
Yeah, where were you, Derek?
Yeah, come on.
Well, I heard you guys talk about it, but I haven't watched it.
No, seriously, it is too... Actually, it's 2 minutes long, but really it's going to take up 10 minutes of your day because you'll watch it probably four more times.
It's really good.
That'd only be 8 minutes.
Well, you got to give the buffer time between the two so you can clean up afterwards.
Oh,
cause,
yeah.
Because seriously, I blew my load when I saw it.
I love how any number for our podcast, if it's something that we could celebrate, it's our celebration, anniversary, birthday.
We kind of celebrate. We celebrate everything,
dude,
though.
We're fucking drunks, man. We'll take any excuse to celebrate anything. Woo! President's Day!
Yay! Yeah! Columbus!
Yay!
Tuesday!
Yay! Any, fuck Monday.
Any day ending in Y?
Yeah. Oh, we were talking about, Kevin and I were talking about that the other night when we were walking down about TGI Fridays, and I want to start a restaurant called IFH Mondays, which I'm pretty sure I stole that joke from somebody someplace, so, you know, don't sue me.
Borrowed it.
Anyway, welcome to Drunk on Comics, everyone.
Hey, thanks, man.
Why do you always say thank you?
I'm blessed to be part of this show.
Well, we're all blessed to be part of it.
You asked me to be here, and you keep on asking me to come back.
Is that the only reason why? Derek, stop.
It's kind of more that we expect him to be here.
Well, we need him here.
But anyway, my name's Derek.
My name's Tony.
Oh, Kevin. Hi.
Yeah, hi.
Hey.
This is our weekly podcast where we're going to talk about comic books, conventions, collecting, industry news, all kinds of fun stuff. Sometimes we talk about all of it. Sometimes we talk about some. But
maybe we might just talk about Thor the whole time. Who knows?
No, because two out of the three of us here, two out of the three of us haven't seen
it. Well, we can speculate. Well, we could still
Which one hasn't seen it?
Matt.
Well, we can talk about the shirtless scenes.
Yeah, there you go.
That'd be nice.
Well,
spoiler alert.
Speaking of spoilers, we're going to get things kicked off here with Off the Shelf. This is where we're going to talk about books that we read this week and for the most part liked. And we may talk about stuff that happens in them. So that's kind of your warning. Kevin always tries to do spoiler-free, but Tony last week did squeak one out of him, which was quite fun. Anyway, Off the Shelf is brought to you by inter-comics.com. Go check out their website. Buy some books from them. They're based out of the UK, but they ship worldwide. And their prices are amazing. So there's no reason that you can't go there and buy stuff. I guess I'll
talk about it right before.
Yeah.
Who's gonna go first?
Yeah,
and
Derek's looking around, being like, "Who's going first?"
I guess I need another shot here, and I'm gonna get this kicked off with Amazing X-Men number one from Marvel Comics. It was written by Jason Aaron. The art on this was pencils were Ed McGuinness. Inks were Dexter Vines, colors were Marte Garcia, and letters Joe Caramagna. And the thing that I got to say before I get into this, I was expecting this book to be another stupid, let's bring another character back from the dead for no other reason except to sell books kind of story. And
isn't that what it is?
At the end of the day, yeah. However, saying that, you know, This book actually gave an explanation from the character's perspective on why he's being brought back to life, which I thought was kind of interesting. Like I said, yeah, this is a ploy to sell more books, but after reading it, I'm not only okay with it, I'm like on board backing up the reasoning for doing it because the story was so good.
I haven't read it yet, but does he want to come back then?
Yes.
See, that just doesn't seem like his character.
Well, okay, so it's a beautiful start where Nightcrawler, number one, has made it to heaven.
Yay.
Which I think is cool. And it kind of made me wonder, too, if Angela will somehow get tied into this book at some point. You know, just because I hadn't really thought of it. But he literally is sitting on the edge of heaven, staring out into, you know, the nothingness, wanting to go back, saying that he felt like there was more to his story, that there were that he wasn't done yet. And it's just a really, really nice touch where even though he's in the one place that he wanted to be all the time, that he feels that he isn't done there and that he has more that he has to do back there, which is kind of a cool thing. I'm not going to really give too much away in this story other than the fact that his father, Azazel, comes and busts into heaven to, like, steal souls, which is kind of an interesting little thing. And that's kind of his whole reasoning for wanting to go back. There's another great thing in here that Firestar, Angelica Jones,
I think. Yeah.
I just remember it's Angelica. But she is now one of the teachers at the Jean Grey School for Higher Learning.
And she's a cutie.
Yeah, I was glad to see her brought back as a character.
Honestly, I haven't seriously, like, I don't read a whole bunch of Marvel, but it's I'm only familiar with Firestar only because of the 80s television show Spider Friends.
Yeah, Spider-Man and his amazing Spider Friends.
Yeah, exactly. So she's drawn. I don't know. Is her costume always like that? You know, the yellow jumpsuit with the red whoop-de-doo mask.
Yeah. Which is cool because her real life persona, she has glasses that are very similar to the mask on there. So I don't know if that's something new because I haven't read anything Firestar since it was like maybe around 84 that there was actually a 4-part miniseries of hers, which I remember reading that forever ago, but I don't remember if she had glasses.
Did you say 84?
Yeah, it was around maybe 84.
Oh, wow.
Okay. But the one of the other neat things, speaking of the Spider Friends cartoon, is that she and Bobby Drake, a.k.a. Iceman, who was also in that show, they got a little flirty thing going on, you know, even though he's got a girlfriend, Kitty Pryde, who in other comics has left that school to go be with the bat. Was that a little purr? the one thing that I want to tell people is don't pass up on this book because it's that device just to sell more books. It's a number one. Nightcrawler's coming back. It's definitely worth picking up. The art by Ed McGuinness is just perfect for a Nightcrawler book. One of the really nice things that they do at the very beginning, too, is when they first show him, the very first thing that you see is a very classic, you know, style from a Chris Claremont book on that first panel there. And then it shows a couple other different things as he kind of progresses, and then it gets into the actual style of this book.
So my biggest question is, were they swashbuckling on the open seas?
Not on the open seas, but on the... in heaven.
So they were on pirate ships, though?
Yeah, well, his Azazel's giant pirate ship comes into heaven.
Okay.
Yeah.
So it's not misleading the title, because the whole time I'm like thinking, I know he's a swashbuckler. I know that he, you know, fights with a sword, a rapier. Like, there's so much that I'm like, because I haven't read it yet, thinking, he's in heaven. How the fuck do pirate ships get there? What's going on?
Well, and the
Captain
sword,
Jack, what?
Yeah, the swords come because he, like some of these baddies that come in with Azazel, he beats the one guy and goes, oh, good, you brought swords. Thank you. So Jason Aaron did a really, really nice job. The dialogue was dead on for Nightcrawler, I thought, and all the rest of the characters. Gave a great reason here. Really, Amazing X-Men lives up to its name, and it truly is amazing. So I think everybody needs to go pick this up, especially if you were a fan of Nightcrawler, or if you just want a good story and you're an old fart like me that likes a little throwback to the days gone by, whether it was the cartoon or whether it was the Claremont era, you know, which that's always been my favorite time. So,
Derek, that review was uncanny.
No, it was amazing. But yeah, two big mugs up on this book.
So this is a 5-part series?
5-part story.
Oh, okay.
This is a new
But this is a new monthly.
New ongoing until they decide that they want to make another number one.
Yeah. There's been so many more number ones recently than...
The number twos?
Yeah. Pretty much so. Well, speaking of number ones, I got a number one.
And it's not a number two.
No. Well, actually, it's only number one only because it's chapter one. It's the beginning and ending of the story arcs. So sometimes you'll have a book that sets it all off, then you follow it in, and then it has that conclusion. So no one and two. But Dark Cybertron, Transformers, chapter one. And the reason why I'm bringing this up is twofold. There's a ton of good books that came out this week, and there's a ton of them I want to talk about. But I haven't talked about Transformers in a while. However, when I was at Toys R Us the other day, I picked up two really cool new toys, and in them...
You know the listeners can't see your toys.
It doesn't matter. I'm telling them. In them, they came with two comic books as well. It's like almost like a two-for-one toy make-your-kids-happy thing. Like, and the Transformers... The Transformers are really good. They're articulate. They're really good made.
They're articulate? They can speak?
Yes.
They do they...
Articulated?
Yes. Motion, bendy, whatever. Both the... These are all the IDW reissued, like, made, like, based off of the designs from these comic books that IDW has been putting out. I believe there's six of them. I could only find two. Now, the books are... older books that were like one shots of these characters. So even though I've already read these as well, I just think it's really cool that they're putting comic books in figurines, because I haven't seen that with any of the X-Men toys lately. Like it used to be back in the day, they really pushed those toys. And you know,
well, it as I remember, the old toys that came with the comics were completely one-off comics that didn't have anything to do with the stories. They were just kind of like things more or less to kind of say who was who.
Yeah, and these, I mean, they still kind of, everything that they've been doing with Transformers, even when they're one-shots, have been, continuity-wise, somehow falls in. You just can't kind of need to know, oh, this piece in here, because it spans billions of years. And that being said, this whole Dark Cybertron event that's going on is really, has spanned since the beginning of Transformers time. We got Shockwave, which... Kevin, are you familiar with Transformers?
Mm-hmm. I am.
Derek, maybe-ish?
Somewhat.
All right. Shockwave is the guy that turns into a gun as well.
Mm-hmm.
We got Soundwave, who is always second in command.
Now, Soundwave was the boombox, right?
Yeah. Okay. And Shockwave was kind of like this, like, emotionist, like, scientist guy. You could almost say he was a second in command. He has usurped Megatron before. Megatron's dead again, because he's died a couple times.
But they'll bring him back and make another number one.
Yeah, pretty much so. And what Shockwave has done, which this whole stories and series have kind of mentioned throughout, is he started coming up. Energon's their fuel, their sources of whatever. And he's been...
Are they still in cube forms?
No, it's kind of liquidy, or they're in small little bar forms, but they haven't been huge.
But not cubes, though.
Yeah, no.
like bar forms, like we can go to it and have a drink?
Actually, yes. They have Energon. There's a guy in one of the Transformers that has an Energon bar.
That'd be awesome. Let's go do shots of Energon. Yeah. Oh, we need to come up with that.
That would be a good shot.
Yeah, let's figure out what it is later.
So Shockwave has been seeded 14 different planets with whatever type of genetic codes or whatever, and it shaped the planets, and it created crystals on these planets, like these ores. And right now, he's finally... everything throughout the eons has come to fruition with Ore 14, the Resurrection Stones. I don't know exactly how that goes, but it does seem like it's going to reboot and bring back some people that have been long past dead. Whether that means he's going to raise all of the dead Cybertronians through the wars or not, I'm not sure. 2 years ago, Transformers, they pretty much got off Earth. They haven't done much anything on Earth. They pretty much figured, in this day and age, we wouldn't be all happy, ha-ha, you just destroyed giant buildings. We're not going to have our military, you know, come after you. And they even did that in the series, where the military was like, we need to fucking get these people off our planet. So I like, in the sense of, you at least understand they were at Earth. they got our, you know, sense of humor, our linguistics, everything. But there's no humans involved, which is just great. And the two, it broke off into More Than Meets the Eye and Robots in Disguise. And the ones were going to find the fabled Knights of Cybertron, while the other one stayed on Cybertron and kind of had another civil war, but the war is over. Decepticons lost, Autobots won, Starscream somehow got voted to be president because he manipulated people. There's a lot of stuff going on that if you're a Transformers fan, you're going to be like, this doesn't seem right. But they have done such a good job throughout all these stories that my biggest thing is continuity. There's stuff in the first couple of pages here who they pretty much take panel for panel from the old stories to kind of show you what's happened before, what's gone on. And you're like, wow, they really did have this ingrained in the story 5 years ago.
Okay, I have a question. This is a little off topic, or maybe it's not. But Shockwave, mm-hmm. is the guy that turns into a gun?
He turns into a gun as well.
Okay, and Megatron turned into a gun.
Yes.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Do they ever explain in any of this shit how a full-size robot can turn into a little gun that another guy can hold?
All right. Well, the difference between the guns is Shockwave is kind of just a giant Cybertronian gun. Like, he's pretty much almost, he's just like a, looks like a gun, but just giant flying ship. So that's the difference between the two.
Okay.
Not in book form, but being the nerd that I am, I've always wondered that. And it's pocket dimensions. Every Cybertronian has parts that can, when they're transforming, either get condensed, moved around, or go into this pocket dimension. For it seems weird. The only reason why I looked it up was when the one thing that I think Michael Bay did okay was he didn't have Transformers do this. All of a sudden become huge and small. That's why all of his Transformers in his movies were big. That's why he had Soundwave being a satellite instead mm-hmm. of a boombox, because really that kind of
boggles the mind. Yeah, a giant boombox isn't going to mm-hmm. like, oh, look, that fits.
Yeah. So that was the one thing he did with that besides fucking up the thing.
Last thing, which is, because I'm trying to catch up, because I watched a lot of the cartoons as a kid. I've seen the movies, but I've never really read the comics here. There was a red boombox.
That's Blaster. That's the yeah. Autobots.
He was an Autobot guy.
Yeah.
Okay.
He had the cassettes. He is just the polar kind of opposite of Soundwave. In this series, he's kind of he's almost like a disc jockey news guy sending out over the airwaves.
Okay.
What's going on with the war.
I was just curious about that.
Yeah. But this story, it's written by John Barber and James Roberts. There's a lot of people that put some time into this issue, especially with taking some of the pages previously with the prologue. So the prologue art was Brendan Cahill. Finished art was Andrew Griffith. Layouts was Phil Jimenez. And colors by Josh Perez. Really, like I said, this book in particular is taking both those story arcs from the two different series to tie them together. Some of them, and it seems like they may actually come back. Like I said, the one group is way on the other side of the universe. All this shit's happening on Cybertron, but it seems like they're going to all meet up. I'm just really excited about this. Like I said, I also am excited that I'm getting free comic books and the toys that I pick up. So, so ultimately, Transformers is still rocking it, even since...
Yeah, how many now monthly series are there in the Transformer world?
There's a couple, but they're different universe, different worlds. In the new mainstream continuity, what we want to say is awesome and follow is, like I said, the two that I said, More Than Meets the Eye and Robots in Disguise. Then there is Regenesis, I believe it is, which is following back in the 80s, that storyline. Mm-hmm. And that's even drawn like the old books. The art's really good, considering what they're trying to do the art with. I think there's even one more. And then there's with the whole new cartoons and all that, they have like a Beast Hunters one or Transformers Prime storyline, or I've seen a couple of them. I don't think those ones are too being published all the time, but yeah, they're getting up there. They're not like Wolverine yet, but...
Or any X-Men or Avengers, yeah. Or, you know...
Can't wait till the tantalizing Transformers or the...
Oh, yeah. Let's start thinking of new Transformers names.
Yeah.
Just the ever-changing.
Ooh.
Yeah.
That's intense.
Okay. Anyway, sorry, Tony. We threw off your mojo.
No. I was just trying to think of other adjectives with starts with T.
Totally.
Teenage turtle.
Dude, what if there was one that was a total '80s throwback and it was totally Transformers?
All right, that's coming next month by ITW. By the way, it's totally Transformers.
Yeah. Okay, so was there anything else, Tony? Like you're stuck on the T thing right now. Yeah, I can tell.
I'm just all of a sudden thinking testicular Transformer.
It's funny because I was thinking almost the exact same thing. Tony's Transformers.
Awesome, best name ever. I'm gonna write my own book now.
Just draw on the cover of that one.
Kevin, what do you got?
Okay. Well, guys, I'm breaking sort of. I think I'm breaking a little bit of a code today. So we call this segment Best on Tap.
No, we don't. We call this Off the Shelf.
Off the Shelf, yeah. You know, I'm getting my segments mixed up, man. Off the Shelf. Okay. You can tell how in it I am today. Okay, so whatever the segment's called, you know, what we're trying to do is we want to discuss to each other and our listeners what was the best.
Or stuff that we just really liked, you know.
Yeah, but, you know, I always think of it as more of like it's the best, because really, but anyway, actually, I'm not going to review what I really think is the best of the week, because there's really a bunch of things that I really dug, I mean, just out there. So I'm going to, I'm already going to come out and say this is probably lower than a few of the things that came out like this week, like Superman, Batman. Number five, a few other things that I'll mention at the end of the end of the show. So what the fuck am I talking about? That RoboCop Last Stand number four by Boom Studios. Story by Frank Miller. Art by Korkut Uztekin. Colors by Michael Garland. And there's this. An extra credit in there, and I don't know what it means, sequential adaptation?
My guess is it's probably more like a storyboard.
Okay.
Type artist. Kind of like when you have somebody that does, like, layouts. It's kind of that same similar.
I've never seen that before, so.
Unless this was adapted from, like, an animated type thing that I'm not aware of.
Okay. Well, it might tie into what I'm going to be blah-blah-blahing about. I have a man crush on RoboCop, if you didn't know.
I'm aware. I don't know how much our listeners are. But.
Well, the movies RoboCop, RoboCop 2, they were awesome. And a lot of the comic book series over the years are pretty damn good. Say, RoboCop versus The Terminator. That was a good series done back in... the mid-90s. So when Boom Studios announced that they were coming out with this series, which, by the way, we actually had a presser on our website, drunkoncomics.com.
Shameless plug.
Of course. this book was already on my pull. At least the pull in my head, because I don't actually have a pull.
You do now?
Well, I did start one the other day for the first time ever in my life.
Really?
Yes.
It only has two books right now, but it'll grow.
Well, I got commitment issues. So.
Got to water it and feed it. And
so
it's a chia pole.
Man, so I'm too much of a lazy fuck to be going on the internet and looking up facts. Facts, schmacks. So I'm going to just speculate a little bit about this book. It's really a simple Google search or a Bing it. You know, we'll probably confirm any of this, but I believe what's happening in RoboCop Last Stand is coming from a RoboCop 3. Now, which if you've seen the movie, you would say fuck that.
Yeah, that one sucked.
The movie was not very good, but I'm pretty sure what they're trying to do here is tell the story told in RoboCop 3 and actually make a good story out of it, which I kind of had an issue with them doing, but the light bulb finally went off in my head. Like, okay, they can do this. Because really, why would you take a piece of shit and remold it? It's still a piece of shit.
Mythbusters did prove that you can polish a turd.
I love that episode. Yeah. They went to town on that poop.
Yeah.
So now we have RoboCop Last Stand number 4. In this issue, this is where it starts to break away from the borderline beat for beat of that movie. And now it's kind of really doing its own thing. For an example, there's a main character in this book that has an unfortunate accident, which that for me is a complete separation from the movie. So here's some talking points on this book. One, the art. Now, the art in this series is kind of annoying. Okay. but that was kind of more first impression. But the more I reread it and reread it, because that's what I do. I reread my comics, and I'm actually starting to dig a little bit more. Everyone in this book is angry. I mean, you flipping through these pages. Look at everyone's faces. They're just pissed off, and really, it should be that way. Everyone is basically saying Detroit is a piece of shit. And tearing it down and leveling it, rebuilding it as Delta City is the only solution. That's dark. And I'm not talking like fucking sinister dark, but bleak. There isn't much hope for life in this city. And except for one small spark, RoboCop.
Yay.
Okay, so point two. So, you ever thought about shooting a RoboCop? Where in the area where his actual face is exposed.
I always wondered why nobody ever aimed there.
Well, they kind of addressed that in this, because that's what I would do. I'm like, fuck, I got, you know, I see some flesh shit going on, I'm going to aim there. And they actually addressed that there, not by any depth by any means. It's touched on, and that's really spiffy. What?
Just the word spiffy.
Yeah. After I've been dropping down F-bombs and shit during this review.
It's fucking spiffy.
There's a robot friendly in this book.
What do you mean a robot friendly?
I'm going to let you stew on that for a little bit.
Are you talking like in District 9 when there were prostitutes that would have sex with the aliens?
No, not like a friendly ending or a happy ending. Friendly ending.
Because that would be spiffy.
when I saw this panel, I had a moment. And I haven't had that. I don't know. I probably had one last week, and I just totally forgot because I'm fucking brain dead half the time. Hell, I couldn't even remember what the fucking segment's called this week. So,
cheers to that.
Point four. This is a great jumping in point. Now, this is not an ongoing series. It's number 4 of 8. So if you've thought about it and you're not sure if you want to pick up 1 through 3, okay, you can start here. However, I'm sure if you wanted to go back, issue number 1 is probably going to be a little bit tough to find, because I went to actually a couple of different stores trying to find this in 2 different states, and I couldn't find issue 1 shortly after it was released. I don't know if they did a second print or whatnot. But
I think they did. Now, which states? Sober and drunk? Or...
No. I was in Indiana. Went to a couple of comic book stores down there, and then I was in Michigan. I was just traveling at the time. But yeah.
I think they did do a second print in number 1, if I remember properly.
Sure. Well, anyway, in conclusion, RoboCop Last Stand number 4. This is good jumping in point. Lots of fun, dark goodness. End of review. Next.
Well, no. I just the one thing that you know, when I first looked at the art in this book too, I was like, yeah, I know. But then after looking through it a couple times, I realized why it still does appeal to me. It's very reminiscent for me of like 90s indie books. Like,
oh yeah.
Like very true independent self-published type stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe even stuff that like not self-published, but maybe more along the lines of like a Caliber, Caliber Press type thing. That's kind of what it reminded me of. So I think for some people that's going to be a big appeal, actually.
Kevin, I got a question for you because I'm assuming you've read more RoboCop than me, because even if this was your only one, that's more than what I have read.
Okay.
So, with that being said...
That's not an assumption, then.
With that being said, do they ever explain why he doesn't go to other cities, like L.A. or...
I don't think I've read enough to know that, because really what I've read...
I mean, I know Detroit has a lot of problems, but like... I don't know. I think it'd be cool to have them go off.
Well,
to...
I think they might have touched that more on with the TV.
They touched the moron?
I was thinking the same thing.
I don't get it.
They touched the moron. They touched that moron with.
If you don't have more off, you have.
Moron.
No, they might address that more in the TV series. You guys, you know there was a TV series?
I don't remember there.
Yeah,
was a TV.
I think I may have blocked that. There out was two or three seasons of RoboCop, and there's plenty of direct-to-video, and those were okay. I didn't watch a whole bunch of them. I just kind of picked and choose. You know that they made a second RoboCop that looked like the first RoboCop, not like RoboCop 2 from RoboCop 2. Or Ed 209.
I am really confused.
No, they made someone that looks like Alex Murphy.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Anyway, so they probably address that in the TV show.
You mean just his chin and face?
they probably do. And you know, I've been actually whenever I do see RoboCop comics, I have been picking them up, because believe it or not, I was going to this comic book store here in town, and they had some back issue RoboCops. I'm like, fuck, I'll just grab a whole bunch of these. And
the one thing, and yes, it's cliche, I know, but I always wonder why the price is anything other than a dollar, just so that you can go, I'll buy that for a dollar.
Yeah, I was thinking about how can I crowbar a classic saying from that movie and plug it into this whatever the fuck this is. We'll call it a review, I guess. And I just couldn't, because I'll leave that for the new movie coming out.
Yeah, which okay. All right, I'm thirsty, so should we jump right into a little booze in a book? Early on,
is it only if it quenches my thirst?
This one will. This week I've got Trillium number 4 from Vertigo Studios, Vertigo Press. Wow, I am ripped. But from Vertigo, written and drawn by Jeff Lemire, and I'm pairing this with a lunchbox. Which
I haven't had a lunchbox in a long time.
I'm surprised we didn't have one the other night. We drank everything else.
Yeah.
But okay, so for people that are not familiar with a lunchbox, it is a half a pint of whatever swag beer they've got on tap, whether it's, you know, your Bud Light, your Miller Lite, you know, your PBRs, doesn't really matter. Just fill a pint glass halfway full. Add another quarter of a pint. So your glass will now be 3/4 full, but you add to the beer orange juice. Then you pour a shot of amaretto, shot glass on the side, and you drop it and slam it like any other bomb, whether it's a Jaeger bomb or a UV bomb or any of these other things. Now, the reason I'm pairing these two together is because both the drink and the book have a ton of shit mixed up together that doesn't really seem like it should make any sense on the surface. And in your mind, you're not going to believe that they should. But once you've gotten over your trepidation and you're like, I don't want to do that. That sounds gross. I'm not comfortable with this book. Once you get past that, you're going to find there's a strange but beautiful concoction in both of them that will not actually make you want more, but you're going to find yourself telling all of your friends about it later and how awesome they both are. So drink up, read up, cheers.
Even it makes me want to dive right into some cheese and chocolate.
Cheese and chocolate.
Yeah, you know.
What shot is that?
No. It was you're talking about weird things that don't sound very good when you put them together.
Yeah.
But I remember doing that when I was a kid. I take a piece of Velveeta, and I just roll it up like a taco shell, and put little chocolate chips in there, and eat it like a taco. It doesn't sound very good, but it was delicious when I was a kid.
Things come up when you're high.
I was just a dumb kid.
Oh, okay. Should we talk about some news?
Yeah.
All right. Tony, what do you get for news this week? Do you have anything that blew you away?
Oh, that blew me away. Not so much blew me away, but it's the first link that I have up is they're talking about another Wolverine movie.
Yeah, I did hear about that, and I guess that I think I saw something from Variety on it where. I guess the director.
Now that's breaking news. They're still around?
Variety? Yeah, I guess so. That James Mangold is in talks to direct it once again, but apparently the biggest surprise is that Hugh Jackman's set to, you know, do the role again.
That's him and Robert Downey Jr. I think they've realized, well, first off, they can ask whatever they want and they're going to get it because they are that character now. They've been established so much. Yes, at some point you're going to have to replace that character, but I think these two genuinely do it for the fans. Like, when you think about it, yes, he's going to get paid lots of money for this, but some artists are like, eh, whatever. But realizing I am the Wolverine.
I am Iron Man.
Yeah, I think I see it as that. So that's cool if he's all down on board. I mean, fuck, though, he's got another Wolverine movie coming out soon, Wolverine X-Men First Class. I mean, that whole Days of Futures Past thing is now involving him a lot more than it did. So
yeah, this, I think, speaking of Marvel shit, I think was probably some of the biggest news that came out.
Oh, it's huge.
Both you guys saw this before I did. Was that Disney/Marvel and Netflix? God, what the hell is wrong with me today? Netflix are doing a superhero team up, and they're coming out with 4 series of shows that are supposed to be 13 episodes long.
Each, yep.
And the one that obviously I'm the most happy about is Daredevil. But that's going to be one, Jessica Jones, Iron Fist, and Luke Cage. And then I saw something that, like, it's going to all culminate in something with, like, the Defenders at the end.
Yeah, I don't know, like, what that's supposed to be. I'm guessing it's going to be like a 3-hour long, you know, TV, like almost if watching it on a Friday night, you know, movie, but it's Netflix, yeah. So you can watch it whenever. That's just kind of cool. And I think the biggest news for this is, A, you're going to start seeing more characters that you want to see portrayed in a certain way, but it gives them now those established characters that they can throw them up on the big screen, not as their own movie, because some of them may not be able to support their own movie, but hell, this could gauge it. More people are tuning into this show. Maybe you might get another Daredevil, Derek. But if not, at least it gives other people that mindset of, oh, there's Daredevil fighting in the background of Avengers. Like, just having that quick cameo, and he's established.
I've always thought that Daredevil would actually make a better TV show than movie, though. Just because I with that splitting between him as Daredevil and him as Matt Murdock, it mm-hmm. always just made more yep. sense to me that way, because he's a long running series, you know, it just works better. Mm-hmm. I think.
Well, yeah, I think why it would work a little bit better is because it's, you don't need to put a bunch of money into the special effects.
Right.
To make it work. Cause really it could just, really, no special effects.
I just need someone that can do parkour and jump around.
Yeah, really. I mean,
have a sparring match on a seesaw.
No,
occasionally,
never. It didn't happen. But, you know, I think one of the cool things, though, with all of these is that you can start tying in some other characters that maybe didn't work as well on screen. Because Punisher has always been one of Daredevil's foes. I mean, he started, yes, as a Spider-Man foe, but he's probably fought... Daredevil and Punisher probably fought together more than they fought anybody else. I think that'd be a nice way of kind of maybe bringing that character back from the I've always sucked on screen type of thing.
Yeah.
You know, so I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah. Okay, one more comment on the on this. Now, this was all over the place, and I was reading this on the New York Post. And I God damn it, man, I fucking hate shitty intros to articles where it starts off, call it Revenge of the Nerds. That's how they start the intro to this damn article. Like, I'm tired of that reference.
Yeah.
What if they were talking about Revenge of the Nerds? Would you be okay with it then? Call it Revenge of the Nerds, because it is.
which article?
It's New York Post. Netflix gambles on 4 Marvel superhero shows, which is also bullshit. Is that it's? I don't know if it's really
gamble?
Is it really a gamble? I mean, I think there's gonna be a winner. I mean, the only issue I could see potentially is that if you release all this information out, or you release all this too close together, then is everyone gonna watch all of it?
Right,
because there's so much stuff out there. You're gonna have to eventually pick and choose what you're gonna want to watch.
Yeah. I think that's why when I saw the article, I chose not to do that one, because I think you guys both sent me links on that with separate articles, and I saw the one from you, and I'm like, call it Revenge of the Nerds, and I went, nope, and I just closed it.
I wanted to always, when we're doing this, like in pre-show, I always wanted to try to get my news, I want to get my news from, like, we'll call it a civilian source.
Right.
Because it could be interesting to see their take on how it is, because you go, if you've from the presser or whatnot, I think you're getting some sort of bias. I don't know. Okay, I want to try to get a Switzerland approach to my to my news.
Yeah, and then they call us nerds. So
they call us Revenge of the Nerds.
What? that's how the nerds.
How Skolnick laughed.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Well, onto the next thing. Another thing from Marvel is that there is a new Ms. Marvel coming out, and she is going to be a teenager. And of course, then, you know, it's going to be kind of interesting. Like, I don't really know how you're going to come up with a new Ms. Marvel. I'm more curious to find out about how she's going to get her powers and stuff like that.
Wait, what happened to the old Ms. Marvel?
She's now Captain Marvel.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I didn't know she got promoted.
Yeah. Set and sail, Captain Cave, Kangaroo.
Captain Caveman.
Captain Crunch. Hanging out with the big boys.
Yeah. But anyway, the one little thing that's going to be going on here with this is that she's going to be a Muslim character.
What?
Yeah. Which, you know, this then also ties in directly in my mind to the fact that DC is basing a new character on a woman by the name of Shannon Kustachin. I hope I'm pronouncing her last name properly. And it's going to be, this character that they're basing on her is going to be part of Justice League Canada. She is a Native American. So my question on this is it important to the character that they have some type of religious or ethnic background tied in, and that's part of the reason that you're doing it, because you have a very important story to tell with that? Or are you doing it because you're pandering to, you know, all the different people out there?
It's all about building a character. It really is. You take a perfect example. Let's take a look at Nightcrawler. I mean, his faith is huge in his character. And it makes him a makes him a good character.
And that's the way I think it should be.
Yeah, and hopefully that's and that's probably what will happen here, not just like I'm Muslim and everyone should know this.
Yeah, I think that partly, too, writers sit down realizing, why are all these superheroes white males? Mm-hmm. That just seems like there should be a... Unless that's some genetic gene that makes them superior, which I'm thinking they don't want to have those connotations at all. So how do we open up those doors to have more superheroes who are of different, you know, native descent or race or color, creed, whatever? So they kind of have to establish that that's a person that's not just the norm.
And I think what comes into play here is that because the comic books are finally catching up to the fact that there's a lot more diversity in the world than what they show on their pages, I think it's going to be a little awkward for a while until they kind of have developed that larger representation of what the world is. I'm not opposed to it by any means.
No, and here's the thing. I just think the thing that just pisses me off is press releases in general for comic books. To a point, you know, you still need to kind of tease some things, but like, really? You're making a new Ms. Marvel character, so people should just talk about there's going to be a new Ms. Marvel book.
But
let the readers read it, and all of a sudden it gets to a point where she says, I'm a Muslim or whatever. That's part of the story. That's not the defining character of her.
Well,
I think that's where the news articles and stuff are. That's making that the defining moment.
But I got no problem with that. They're just trying to, you know, get people interest in it. And, you know, anytime there's interest and people can pick up some issues, that's good for them, because they're in the business of selling books.
Yeah. Well, and I mean, like the first article that I saw about the new Ms. Marvel came from the New York Times. So there's your Switzerland. But of course, you know, their title on this was Mighty Muslim and Leaping Off the Page. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it's like, okay. So you aren't really talking about the character as much as you're talking about the character's background. Yeah. But
bigger question that I have is the porcupine with the Hulk hands on the cover there.
Yeah.
Kind of wondering.
I'm curious. I mean, shit.
Wait, what?
Oh, I just closed.
I just closed the link too, but it's a picture of probably the first cover of the series, and it's a porcupine with Hulk hand. It looks like foam.
Oh.
Yeah, and then she's got like a great big blown up normal hand. But yeah, so one other thing that I saw this week was that this is now the third time we've discussed this. Term Wife was going to be a movie starring Vince Vaughn, and Term Wife wasn't going to be a movie. Now Term Wife's going to be a movie again. So that's all I'm saying about it. Because yeah, I'm not saying anything more, because next week or 2 weeks I'll have to go, no, it's not. But I hope it is. I want to see it.
One thing that might make you happy, Derek, is it looks like there's going to be a Death of the Watcher.
Fuck yes. I hate that guy.
Certain places have been getting these postcards with just a picture of what looks like the Watcher on the ground with the police line, do not cross, like in the white, you know, sketched out.
I would love to see the chalk outline of his huge head.
I don't know. There's speculation, but, you know, this looks like it's going to happen in May, so it's going to be the big May event, and whatever's coming is going to change the Marvel Universe forever.
Till next spring. Well, Tony, thank you for making me happy. I'm going to make you happy with something.
Okay.
Jim Starlin posted something to his Facebook page with, you know, in the image was of a Thanos type person. Looks exactly like Thanos, but his face was kind of blurred out. And it's basically what he said was, just finished the last page of a 100-page story I've written and penciled for Marvel Comics. But at this time, I can't say exactly what the project is. Details will be released when I can release them. Look for it next summer.
That's cool.
Yeah. So, and I mean, I know that Starlin's been one of your favorites forever.
Oh, yeah. And so is Thanos.
100 pages, man. What's that going to retail for?
Well,
fuck.
Four to five issues.
Yeah, it could be
Oh, it's just not one. See, when you say 100 pages,
it's a 100-page story. So yeah,
yeah. Because I'm just thinking I'm going to get one single issue with 100 pages on it.
Well, it's possible. I mean, it's going to be a $8.99 book if that's the case. But oh well,
it'd be well worth it.
Yeah,
it could be worth gold, and I'd pay gold.
Yay, gold. I don't know. All right,
dude. I got. I'm gonna jump in. Throw in this note. Is you guys ever pick up a comic shop news?
Yes.
Yes.
You do. Okay. Did you read it at all this week?
No.
Okay. So comic shop news is this is a paper, like I would say, like a newspaper-esque 8-page.
More or cheap, less advertisement.
Cheap insert for comic shop retailers. Their format's been pretty consistent over the last couple decades. Article and then information about comics that are going to be out in the next month or two. They had an excellent, excellent write-up of Afterlife with Archie in it. And it's almost to the point where it was actually almost filled with spoilers, because it was a great read, chock full of information I had no idea about Afterlife with Archie, and the ideas of where they're going to go with it. I mean, they're already talking about issue 8 and 9.
That's awesome.
I'm like, holy shit, man. I'm going to leave that spoiler free. But Comic Shop News I don't remember the number. I'm just doing this off the cuff.
Last week.
Yeah,
just go ask for last week at your shop.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. And, Afterlife with Archie is on the cover, so.
Sweet.
Yeah, Comic Shop News, check
that out.
Did they
talk about Sabrina being in it still?
Yes.
Ah, you spoiled it.
Awesome. All right. Let's jump right down onto the Indie Turnpike here.
Well, I'm just going to sit here and mutter shit about you guys the rest of the show. Fucking bastards.
That was fucking awesome. Okay, so this week for Indie Turnpike, I have Absolution Rubicon, number 5 of 5 from Avatar Press.
I bet you would, you dick.
This is written by Christos Gage. Artwork is by Daniel Geet. I hope I'm saying it. G-E-T-E. On there. And Digicore Studios did the color. This, first, there's two things I got to say. This is not a jumping on point book. I mean, it is 5 of 5. You're not going to really understand what's going on if you just grab it. That said, go back and get issues 1 through 4 and then pick up this one as well. This is the final showdown between the main character, John Dusk, and the bad guy, Polymath, in here. And basically, what this John Dusk has these powers that are, he can kind of create force fields. He almost has kind of, well, manipulative powers of force, where he can shoot tendrils out of his fingers. He can kind of like throw little, like, energy spikes. I mean, he can kind of make things that he wants out of this energy that comes out of his body. It's very, very cool. The Polymath is this guy who constantly evolves and can, like, almost like Siler on Heroes, where he could keep learning new techniques. And, you know, it's kind of that where he just keeps learning and learning. Or if he's put up against something, his body figures out how to evolve, and then it creates something from there. So, I mean, the guy's super deadly. What I loved about this book and this whole series is that this is what is probably the most realistic scenario of a world with superpowered people that has ever been written. I mean, you actually have real world problems mixed with fantasy situations that are so unbelievable. It blew my mind. And now the book is pretty dark. It's very violent, not for children whatsoever, but the book is actually touching. I mean, like, I got emotionally invested in these characters, and this book has me just so happy with how everything went that when I get done with this later tonight, I'm going to go back and reread the entire series again. It was that good. There's also a follow-up story that's going to be coming out here, which I saw like in a little kind of cover preview things here in the back, and I'm going to flip here and tell you in December, which is going, I'm guessing, it, based on the title, that it's centering around the side character in this, which is this young Japanese girl who wears a motorcycle helmet, the Japanese schoolgirl outfit, and slings katanas around, and she's a super deadly assassin called Happy Kitty. And so there's another series coming out with her. And if that is even half as good as this story arc, it's going to be a must-read, guaranteed. So go check this out. If you have to wait until it comes out in trade paperback, then that's the way it's going to have to be. But if you can get issues 1 through 5 and you don't mind violence when there is reason behind it, this is a great book to pick up.
I like the cover.
Yeah. It's a...
Yeah, it's sharp.
Yeah. It's been fantastic. And Christos Gage, man, fucking hats off to that guy for writing a story that I don't know how anyone else could have done what he did.
I got something for you guys that you need to check out. It's this week's Barback. It's from the guys at Ink Whiskey. That's their company name. It's Concealable Entertainment Flask. Pretty much on this page, it kind of shows it's an old NES cartridge. And the prototype that they originally had was just that super glued together, holding some drinks. They've upgraded it to a better sealed version of it. But this is a pretty fucking cool, like, gift. They're halfway backed. They're looking to make 12,000, and they got a little under 6,000 with 13 days to go as of today. It's something that, I don't know, holds your drinks, it holds your whiskey, and it's something that's really, really different type of flask.
It was on Kickstarter, you said?
Yeah, it was on Kickstarter. The reason why I really wanted to just talk about this and back this project is not only is it cool as a little hidden flask, and it's something that I may, since my brother's not here, may get him for Christmas. And
you know he won't listen to this, yes, if he's not here. Yeah.
So, haha, you could know your things. But it's the labels that they've made, like the Super Bar Hop Bros, Castle Vodka, The Legend of Drink, Metal Beer.
Drunk Hunt?
And my favorite, Drunk Hunt.
Like, yeah.
And they have their artists, in-house artists who's made these custom logos. There is a, for their highest backing, you can get whatever favorite game you want, and their artists will make a parody logo of it to stick on the flask. But
how much is that?
That one is the highest one for $250.
That's not terrible.
No, and these aren't like for just a general, I think it's just the Drunk Hunt or whatever. You can get the cheapest, you know, the A button variety with Drunk Hunt for only $15. So that's actually really not that much. And then for $20, you can pick some of the other ones. There is a special gold-plated Legend of Drink edition that you can get for $75, I believe, or $50. So, yeah. It's something that you guys should definitely check out and maybe get as a gift for your friends.
Or just buy for myself. I actually think I'm going to do this.
You can just hide it up on your...
The thing is it's not concealable because, I mean, shit, these games came out in, what, the early 90s?
You have your PS4 up there with one game.
Or you're at the bar, oh, I just returned in my game to my friend. You let me borrow it. That's cool. Yeah, I just went to Kickstarter and searched flask, which was an easy way to find it.
All right.
So,
We were talking right before. We haven't seen any really covers that have wowed us lately. So we haven't really done Best on Tap because we feel that should be something that we are all in agreement. We all think this is fucking sweet. So earlier today, I'm like, you guys really need to check out this one.
No. What was great? Let me back up. I mentioned to Kevin the other night when we were hanging out, I'm like, dude, did you see the cover to such and such? It's like, yeah, I did. I'm like, I go, dude, that was awesome. Come in here pre-show. Tony goes, all right, I've got Best on Tap this week. And he holds it up and I'm like, dude, that's the same thing I did. I hold my picture up at the same time.
Yeah, you take it from your phone. You're like, I have that right here to show.
Yeah. So it was Spawn. And I
number 237
covers by Todd McFarlane, and to me it's the Spawn cover, it, like the Spawn mask, which is on it, very like a Day of the Dead kind of design to it. Kind of a maroonish background, just the black and white drawing of the mask, just beautifully simple. Yeah,
you, honestly, and when great. I picked this, I picked this up because I reviewed it probably 2 months ago.
Yeah,
and actually, I've been reading it, and honestly, not until you guys or Derek and we were talking about it that I actually went back and looked at it, because it was just like, it was Spawn. We grabbed it and then didn't really put much. I didn't really look at it. And, wow, it is very detailed and beautiful.
Yeah, that was a cool one. So, and it was funny because normally we have to lobby a little bit for which one's better, you know. But so that definitely was a group effort on that one. Tony, do we have anything else?
Not that I can think of right now. I may have killed some brain cells and forgot, but I think we covered most everything we were going to.
I got a shit ton of last calls this week because it was actually a really good week. So, Tony, why don't you kick off and then whatever stuff, and Kevin, whatever else you've got in there.
I got a couple.
God is Dead is fucking kicking. That's alive and well as a book.
Kevin?
Oh, Swamp Thing 25. This would be my first Swamp Thing I've ever picked up. I've never read Swamp Thing before.
Charles Soule writing it?
Yeah, yeah, and that's why I picked it up. Charles Soule, man. So that Batman Superman number 5. I mentioned this earlier, and awesome that it reads horizontally. The entire book read horizontally in this. I've never seen that before. And, of course, the art's kick-ass. That's really, really good. If you want more information about that, we have a really cool review on our website, drunkoncomics.com.
Shameless plug. Yep. No, and actually, that was the first issue that Brett Booth did the art on that series. So, yeah, I have not been able to read mine yet, so I'm really excited.
Oh, fuck you. I know you. I think we all had huge hauls this week.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so I understand.
Hinterkind number 2, it's still great. It's one of those series that it's just totally different than every other superhero zombie type assassin book. So, really good.
Longshot saves the Marvel Universe.
That's fucking awesome. Did you get the chance to read it? Or?
Yeah, I read it. Yeah.
Did you like it?
I don't know yet.
I just love Longshot. Like,
yeah,
luck powers is the coolest powers ever.
I think for me personally, I think one of the coolest things in here was that the writer Hastings, and I cannot remember his last name. Hold on, or first name, Christopher Hastings. I wanted to say Matt, but Christopher Hastings in here threw a nice little nod out with mentioning Ann Nesenti in here. You know, like. One of the characters, like, was in there going, hey, please don't tell Nesenti about this. I need this job. And Nesenti is the writer who actually created Longshot. I thought that was just kind of a nice little nod in there.
That's cool. Iron Man, it's kind of filling the gap. They just got over that whole big story arc from, revealing that he has a brother. So this was kind of, it was a really good one. It was kind of the scenario of one of those what if could happen things, and it was good read.
The Star Wars number 3.
Thought you weren't going to pick those up anymore.
I still don't know how I feel about it, but I have to read them. Like I don't read any other Star Wars books, but I'm more curious to see how this shit plays out. Hit number 3 of 4 from Boom Studios, Bryce Carlson.
God damn it. They came out this week?
Yeah.
Fucking bullshit. I'm pissed because it's just maybe I should put that in my pool.
Yeah, you should, because it's great.
See, well, because like, I picked up number 1 and 2, and enough said.
Forever Evil number 3, Bizarro Superman is by far the coolest person in DC Universe right now. And he doesn't do much, but just,
yeah,
he's in there, but that was a good one.
Cooler than Mr. Freeze?
You mean Captain Cold?
Man, that's hot. Like,
Firestar?
Yeah, I was going to say like the blown up planet of Krypton, but...
All right, Daredevil Dark Knights, number 6. East of West, number 7. I'm still reading Doctor Who Prisoners of Time. Number 10, there's two more issues, and I'm probably going to do a wrap-up on that whole thing at the end.
Okay.
All Crime Comics, number 2, I was really happy that finally came out. And then Drum Heller, number 1, from Riley Rossmo and Alex Link, and Image Comics.
And for me, the last one for me was Cataclysm, Ultimate's Last Stand. That was cool for me because I don't know dick about the Ultimate Universe.
Yeah.
So that's that was kind of a winner for me.
That was one that I looked at, but I had so many books this week that I passed on.
Your wallet was like,
yeah. I'm just like, well, in that and time, you know. I mean, there are so many, only so many hours in the day.
Just jerk off less.
Nah.
Listeners, do want to quick tell you guys there are two alternative endings, two special whatevers, the fuck you'd call them, at the end of Thor.
Little extras.
Yeah, extras. So there's one like halfway through the credits and then stay till the very end. So laugh at all the people that start getting up to leave and be like, haha, they're missing out.
Anybody that gets up and leaves before the absolute end of a Marvel movie at this point is just silly.
Yeah, and Marvel has... I used to always just get up during the credits, but...
That's me.
What? You're silly?
I guess I'm silly, because honestly, I don't really give a shit.
It's the thing that everyone talks about more than the damn movies half the time.
The Thing is in it? Why'd you have to spoil
it?
God, what
you,
an asshole.
Dick.
All right. Go check us out on Facebook. Check us out on Twitter. Go check us out at drunkoncomics.com, shameless plug, because actually there's a lot of good shit going on there. We've got a lot of great reviews, and occasionally there's more stuff going on there, too. Anything else?
That's it.
Kev? Dude, that put the bow on the show.
The bow on the show? All right. Go get some more drinks, guys.
Yep, let's go.
All right, guys. Keep reading those comics. We'll be back next week to talk to you about them again then.
In our post-credit announcement, Loki dies at the end. Sorry. Secret double probation post-credit. Odin dies, too.
Wait, what?
Just watch it and see.
You're a dick.